This morning, I was certainly asking the spirit of life to come to me. I got up, trying to maintain a zen-like peace while the coffee percolated forever. So I was looking outside, obviously being nervous about the sermon, because this is a difficult topic. We're going to talk about race and racism. But I got to thinking, there's a reason for conversation. One of my previous jobs, I worked in a factory that did production. And a lot of the people that worked out on the actual production floor were usually first generation Mexican Americans, spoke little to no English. We're talking within 100 words of vocabulary. It's amazing and brave. So one of my coworkers, I'd worked with her for years at this point, 2 or 3 years. We spoke and saw each other several times a day. But one day, I was a little too busy to try to figure out how to mime what we needed from each other. So I forgot that I'm scared, and I spoke Spanish. So I spoke my little broken Spanish to her, and her eyes lit up. And not only did I get exactly what I needed, she got exactly what I needed, but I learned that she had a personality. She was funny, really, really funny. I've known her for years. I didn't know that. So perhaps language can really open up a whole different conversation. So maybe we should have this discussion. Ready? Now, this is a unique sermon because it's actually a collaborative effort between Eric Johnson and myself. He was the one that gave us the idea and the theme behind this and a lot of the supporting material. So when we are talking about race and racial diversity in religious communities, it's tough. It's also been said that Sunday morning is the most segregated hour of the whole day. Blacks go to black churches, whites go to white churches, and no, never shall they meet. Except for here, right? We should also note that our Unitarian Universalist faith is still predominantly white. Oh. So how do we feel about that? And a better question, how do we even engage the topic of race and racism? Squirming is okay. So in 1997, the UUA, which is the Unitarian Universalist Association, came out with the Journey Toward Wholeness, an anti-racism institute initiative as an attempt to address racism within our own religious body. As part of that rollout program, the UUA sent a trained facilitator to Meadville Lombard Theological School, our own UU seminary in Chicago, Illinois. And this person was to teach the program. I should also mention, it was Eric Johnson's first year of seminary, and he witnessed what followed. The facilitator was prepared to show the students the path that they must walk to anti-racism. However, he was not prepared in the least to answer the pointed and frankly hostile questions of the faculty. Several older white professors were disturbed by several aspects of the program, its accuracy, its implications. But to the student's eyes, this only served to prove the point. The facilitator had been explaining that the focus of most of our justice work, UUs that is on the victims of racism and not the oppressors that benefit from racism. Perhaps we need to put greater focus on the power and privilege that white people have in our racist society. The main thrust of this program was addressing power and privilege. It also heaped shame upon the beneficiaries of white oppression. The heated grumblings of the white professors had only served to support the journey towards wholeness argument. However, this whole time, one person had been silent, someone frequently deemed as UU's greatest living theologian, the Reverend Dr. Thundayica, a black woman. Let me give a little background on her. This comes from a slightly paraphrased version of Meadville Lombard's website. In addition to teaching at Meadville Lombard Theological School, Thundayica is the president of the Center for Community Values and an affiliated minister with Unitarian Universalist Church of Rockford, Illinois. She's the author of The Embodied Self, Friedrich Schleiermacher's Solution to Kant's Problem of the Empirical Self, and Learning to be White, Race, Money, and God in America. I intend to devour the contents of that book. I would love to chat with you about it. Her current research focuses on the nature, structure, and meaning of human affection and empathy in religious communities. Thundayica's approach is interdisciplinary, drawing on historical theology, contemporary self-psychology, race, class theories, and gender and cultural studies. She's taught in various places, like San Francisco State University, Williams College, has been a fellow at Stanford Humanities Center at Stanford University, and a visiting scholar at Union Theological Seminary in New York City. I'm not done. Before receiving her doctorate in philosophy of religion and theology from Claremont Graduate School, Thundayica was an Emmy Award-winning producer. An ordained UU minister and theologian, she was given the Xhosa name Thundayica, which means one who is beloved by God. She received this name from Catholic Bishop Desmond Tutu in 1984. That person also won the Nobel Peace Prize that same year. So, this is who we're talking with. So back to the incident. What the students didn't know at the time was that Thundayica had received the program ahead of time and had prepared some remarks in advance. After hearing the concerns of the other professors, she rose and spoke in a voice that Eric describes to me as both soft and kind. You know, you can't find her on the internet. I used all of my power of Googling. It's interesting. So she's very private. The one YouTube video that I did find, or somewhere I found, was someone else introducing her to give a sermon, but not the sermon itself. Interesting. So after she stood and began to speak in her soft, kind voice, what followed was an evisceration of the arguments presented in the program. With surgical precision and blinding brilliance, she challenged the presenter, and in short order, the facilitator left in a huff, unable to respond to her arguments. 2 years later, Thundayica delivered a lecture entitled Why Anti-Racism Will Fail at the annual UUA General Assembly, which concisely presented her argument. Now that reading is starting to make a little more sense. We will have a few copies for your viewing in the worker room, and I would love to continue discussing it. As well as, I believe Eric has a copy of his signed book, Learning to be White, which was published just before the GA lecture. Please know that Thundayica is not distancing herself from the UUA, because our denomination does many wonderful things, and she is committed to it. In fact, she opens her comments about this difficult topic to the General Assembly by saying, I accepted this invitation knowing I would have to speak out against an official UUA program, something I do with great reluctance. But otherwise, my own work might be mistranslated here at GA into yet another talk about white racism. As I hope to show, such racial talk is counterproductive to social justice mission that we have in our denomination. So the issue that she had with the program was threefold. Violated our first principles, which is to actively affirm and promote the inherent worth of individuals. Second, makes a false assumption about the nature and power structure in America. And third, misrepresenting the actions of results of shame as evidence of white racism. So let's take it back. Number one, violating the first principle. Our first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every individual, is an unabashed rejection of the Christian doctrine of original sin drink that in. I had to. This doctrine states that humanity is inherently flawed and sinful, thus necessitating a savior to atone. So in order to say that all whites are inherently racist is to advocate a similar doctrine, and it denies our ability to save ourselves. Second objection, the mistaken assumption about the nature and structure of power in America. I'd like to take a direct quote from her essay on this one. To answer the question, we have to turn to the second problem I have found in the UU anti-racist strategies, the errant assumption that white America works for white Americans. Anyone who cares to look will quickly discover that it doesn't, at least not for the vast majority of them. The privilege that, according to the anti-racists, comes from membership in white America actually belongs to a tiny elite. That point has been getting a lot of press these days in the Occupy movement, the 1% versus the 99%, and the unequal distribution of wealth and power that subverts our democracy. Perhaps she called this one. But where she takes it is even further. For her, the disparity of this may lead to tremendous shame, and it might actually be the underpinnings for all racism. What would happen if white America doesn't play by the rules of systemic racism? Would they lose their white privilege card? Haven't they? Us? Hasn't anyone who's spoken out lost the support that comes with the system? It's interesting. The third objection is a little dense, so I'm gonna try to break it down. I'm really paraphrasing this. Please look into the essay and definitely in her book and talk to me about it afterwards. The third one, which was misrepresenting actions resulting from feelings of shame and powerlessness as evidence of white racism. This is blending self-psychology and economics and history. The core of this theory lies that there could be two responses for feeling powerless and helpless: lashing out at others and lashing in at self. Lashing out, sometimes this results in making a scapegoat out of someone or a group of people. To lash out is to ease some of the feeling of powerlessness that would otherwise turn inward in shame. After all, if you had the power to strike out at what was making you feel helpless, you wouldn't have that feeling in the first place. But perhaps we also lash in at ourselves. And this is what Thandeka is pointing out, saying that the majority of our congregants are racist because of the color of their skin. We are denying their own dignity and worth. Perhaps we've created this as something to afflict ourselves with, to punish ourselves and soothe the pain of our helpless nature. When have you not said something when there is a larger group acting differently? So in an attempt to discuss these, where does that leave us? Our own denomination is still trying to figure it out. And as always, the power is in the pews in this location and throughout our denomination. So we've got to figure it out individual by individual, heart by heart. The good news is Thandeka gave us some suggestions about how to proceed. First, in good old UU fashion, read. Start reading groups in your local congregations that will help you figure out how to talk sensibly about the link between race and class in America. Learn how the creation of this so-called white in this country was a means to exploit this person's labor. Discover what white Americans have in common with other people of color, and work on language that takes into account the fact that this racial socialization process in this country makes racial victims of us all. I would like to rewind one more time. There's a section of this sentence. Discover what white Americans have in common with other people of color. The reason why this is important is when I was younger, not that much younger, I can tell you. I used to feel sorry for white people. They didn't have any culture, no heritage. They couldn't fist pump the air and proclaim their whiteness. That wasn't PC. Poor things, what did they have left? And then I met my first Irish Catholic. Oh, perhaps that's culture. Then, even better, that same Irish Catholic became a lapsed Catholic, and it was still part of her cultural identity. Perhaps you too have culture. Do not allow yourself to be whitewashed into thinking you don't. You have traditions and culture and things that you've been brought up with, things you've inherited, things you are doing today that will translate into culture for tomorrow. Second of Thendayka's offerings, empathize. Learn to replace moral judgment with loving compassion. All of us have made decisions and acted in ways that compromise our moral integrity. Use our collective power as a religious movement to help each other heal our crippled ability to relate to our full integrity of our humanity. Create new rituals in your Sunday services, not unlike this one, to allow persons to feel the healing power, a beloved community. The first time I came face to face with a friend and I had to say to her, because it was bubbling up in me, I'm sorry, I thought you were just white. I didn't know that your family does Christmas the same way every day, or your Italian grandmother makes a certain dish this exact way that has passed from her to the next generation, to the next generation. I didn't know. I lessened you by not seeing it, and I apologize. Colorblind's a buzzword for me. It's a good idea, but I think it's missing something. I am African American. I am a card-carrying black girl. Thank you. I think my skin color is pretty cool. I think my culture is pretty cool. I think that the cadences and dialect that shows up in my voice when I'm around friends is pretty neat. And it influences jazz and soul and gospel. It's in me. Don't miss that. My hair is pretty cool. It grows just like this. Don't miss that. Don't be colorblind to that. And I won't be blind to you. So I'm going to try to forgive myself for all the times that I am, because I'm blind to a lot of things. I don't know if you are, but I'm going to try to see you better. And I would ask that perhaps maybe you do the same. That'll change the conversation when it comes to race and racism, is what I think. Thendayka's suggestion number 3, organize. Build coalitions, not unlike UCM, United Congregations of Metro East, interfaith, interracial groups. Using your new vocabulary and your new commitment to empathize with the work of other UU congregations and liberal religious groups who are tired of separating race and class in the conversation. I should mention, also in that same childhood, born of black power and black is beautiful, I also was called white by other black people, because I was middle class. I didn't believe that there was a tie between racism and class until folks started trying to take my black girl card away. Are you kidding? I can't turn it off. So perhaps there's something there. Perhaps the brand of English that I speak has more to do with my class than my culture. Perhaps the schools that I attended, the fact that I can say I took a race and religion class at McKendree University, has something to do with my class and my culture. Thandayika says, I believe that we have the power to transform America because of who we are. We are Middle America. Transform this group, and you transform the country, because we are the majority. All we need is the moral courage to practice what we preach. And we will generate this moral courage through love. So may it be. I invite you to sing our final hymn, number 170 in our gray hymnal. We are a gentle, angry people.